Amen. Well, I'm excited to have a conversation partner for our service and sermon today. If everyone would, in the chat, welcome Donette Scott. Donette, welcome.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with you this way today.
Fantastic. I am excited to do this service with you. So today is the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany. Mm-hmm. And then we start in the next season of Lent. And there's been some things stirring in me and kind of what this season means and kind of what's going on in our world. Mm-hmm. And some of you may know, watching, Donette participated in a direct action against the Line 3 tar sands pipeline that is, you know, under construction, about a week and a half ago. And I want to have a conversation with you about that. But first, I want to set the larger theme of why I think this is timely to talk about today. And, you know, there were some things that images that struck me this week. And some of you, if you watch the Super Bowl, or if you don't watch the Super Bowl, but you like watch the commercials, like one of the top five of the night was the Jeep commercial with Bruce Springsteen. I don't know. Did you see that, Donette?
Sorry, no. I'm not on TV a ton, so no.
Good.
I didn't see the Super Bowl.
Then you don't have to get these images out of your mind. So if you didn't see it, y'all can look it up on YouTube. But the idea of this commercial, and even Jeep, the makers of it, were hoping that this would be the most spiritual Super Bowl commercial that's like ever been produced. Okay, so that was like the goal.
That's the goal.
That was the goal. And, you know, Bruce Springsteen being the voiceover and, you know, riding around in a Jeep with cowboy boots in Kansas in the middle of the winter, looking, you know, because he's a man. And really calling a broken nation to the middle. And, you know, so in some ways, like some people are really moved by this commercial. Like it's really, I kind of saw it as basically the gospel of America.
Sure.
Was being presented in this commercial. Yeah, you get, there's a lot of good things to love about Bruce. So I appreciate the love Bruce didn't love the commercial. There you go. Right. We love all people. And there's this little chapel in the middle of Kansas, kind of in the middle of the 48 states, you know, and so this is the image of like, let's get back. It's hard to get back to the middle, but like really the middle is where the healing is going to happen. And, you know, so the images of this chapel, you can see the picture on the left is like the cross over top America, which is an American flag. And it's like, pray for America. So that's an image that's kind of in the consciousness of our state. And then the middle of this week, and you participated in this as well, Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light hosted this big event to protest the Line 3 pipeline, and had a lot of Native voices and speakers and activists a part of sharing that time. And this is what gave me clarity, because I've kind of been like, you know, the mythic gospel Americana commercials always kind of strike me in a like no kind of way.
Yeah.
But it was hearing these native voices just talk about like the posture of their entire life in relatedness to the belovedness of one another and the land, where I'm like, now that's good news.
Mm.
You know, it's like, I'm like, Wednesday to me, when, and I think you had this experience too, watching and listening to these speakers, it's like, that's wisdom.
Yeah.
That's wisdom, and that's good news, and that's what's really going to heal us. And so as I was thinking of like closing out Epiphany, Epiphany is about the wisdom comes from far away. The wise people from the East, they weren't the ones in the middle. They weren't the ones in power in Jerusalem making the decisions, but they were the one that they were the ones who had the enlightenment about what, who and where reconciliation and peace and healing was actually going to come from. And I'm like, that is really the message of the Epiphany, to be that the wisdom often doesn't come from the middle. It comes from the margin. That's kind of the big idea for me in closing out this season. And I don't know if you had any, I'll let you just share any reflections you had on, here's the image from that rally that we participated in online, if there was anything particular that stuck out to you.
Yeah, I think it also fell on me, the wisdom aspect, and how I've been thinking since then about how when I'm aware, personally aware, that an encounter I've had with another person where things were shared back and forth, and it really dawns on me, or the epiphany of, wow, like we just shared wisdom together. Or because I work with students so often, like, wow, whatever just happened that coursed through me and came out this way was actual wisdom. And it is a full body experience. And so as I listened to the water protectors and I listened to our native relatives, I just kept recognizing that same sensation that I feel, and recognizing part of why that even takes place is because of in those moments, the connectedness you have with all things. So that wisdom doesn't just come from here, and it doesn't even just come from your heart. But as I listened to the water protectors, I was like, they so recognize their connection to all of creation, to water, to each other, to land, to tree, to the four-leggeds, to the winged creatures, to the sun. I mean, they're actually living, bodily connected to all of creation, which as I even say that out loud, David, I'm thinking about the last 15 years that I've lived here, where from up front, we've heard you talking about being reconciled to all things. And I almost want to graduate those words. I mean, I think it has to start with reconciliation because we're so disconnected. But there's just this tetheredness and connectedness, whole body, to all things that allows us to even walk in wisdom. And as an aside, when I say there's moments that I might share something that I feel like I'm walking in wisdom, I get moments. These folks live there, you know? And so we have so much to learn. We have so much to learn. And in the sense of the margins, I mean, here we're talking about, I don't know that there's a greater, more marginalized people than our native and indigenous relatives.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. You know, one of the speakers, and I've talked about Reverend Jim Bear Jacobs before. And I, you know, I'll say this at the end too, but one of the things that has impacted me is just, you know, you know, where to start is like you start following and listening.
Yeah.
To the, you know, these wise elders, right?
Right.
Like, I was so grateful just to be in that space on Wednesday, because it's like, I needed just to be immersed with wisdom, like, you know, with all the, you know, crazy, like that was, it was in a sense, just kind of, it really was refreshing.
Yes.
Like,
oh, yes.
Of yeah. Be like, so I just encourage all of Mills Church, and we'll provide some links too, but that's just been a place for me that where I started was just following the, you know, follow these people on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, read their, Jim Bear writes Healing Stories Minnesota, which is a blog. And you know what, he shared a story on Wednesday that really impacted me, but you know, he is a helpful voice in saying we really need to decolonize our faith and our tradition. And as a, you know, a Christian pastor that Jim is and native speaker, that's a lot of his work of like most of what passes as Christianity is really just white imperialism. You know, I think of that even, you know, the first half of my life, if I heard kind of native speakers were connected with the, you know, what you said, like the winged creature and the four-legged, I'd just be like animism. Or like, totally. You know what I mean? Like I had all of these like discrediting, like that's dangerous.
Yep.
That's not wisdom. That somehow that was dangerous to my, like it would pollute my Christianity rather than like save it.
Yep.
So like I've come a long, like I realized like I've come a long way to sit in the space and receive it as like life-giving and not threatening, and just realize that's actually a lot of the liberating, decolonizing work that we need to.
And to now be in a position where you hunger for it.
Yeah.
It's like I spiritually hunger to be in the presence of these voices, which I'm just going to pause us for half a second to say one recommendation I would make is the book Native by Caitlin Curtis. And it's subtitled.
Keep holding it up. Keep holding it up. There you go.
I can't find my camera here.
You got it.
So it's subtitled Identity, Belonging, and Rediscovering God. And I have been reading this literally for months, because I'm chewing on it so slowly and I'm still only like just over half. I'm just started part four. It's beat up and it's highlighted and it's lined and it's starred and it's frown faces and smiley faces, you know, all my emotional responses to the different things that I'm learning. And I follow her on Instagram as well. I just can't recommend it more highly. And it's her particular journey of heading. She's half white, half native, and her returning back to native roots. So I know that's not all you're here this morning, but.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you.
Resource, yeah.
And she's also very active on social media, a good person to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So she speaks
at a lot of conferences.
Yeah, so, you know, the decolonizing story that Jim Bear shared on Wednesday was he was, in Southern California, visiting some of his Aboriginal Australian Native siblings. And they were noticing the eucalyptus trees that really are kind of grow wild all over Southern California. And they shared that the eucalyptus tree is really a sacred sibling in Australia to the Aboriginal people. And in Australia, it grows in kind of this circular spiral pattern that makes an incredibly dense hardwood that's really useful. Mm-hmm. And they shared it was, you know, kind of the exploitive capitalism story was the railroad companies in the U.S. wanted to then bring that tree and plant it kind of along the railroad so that because it grows quickly and it's a hardwood and it would make good railroad ties. So, but what happened was when that tree travels from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere, the spiral pattern like goes in the opposite direction and the wood is actually quite weak and useless. So, and I never really understood the whole, like, you know, in Australia, the toilet water flushes the other, you know, I think it, I don't know, something might those related. Yeah. I have no idea the science behind it. Dan McCarthy, maybe you can look this up for us and give us some horticultural wisdom on the spiral of the southern hemisphere. But, you know, so his Aboriginal siblings made this observation. They're like, wow, you know, our sacred tree intentionally made itself weak and useless so that it could not be exploited. Kind of this wisdom of becoming useless to exploitive capitalism in order to like be a sign of a different resistance in life, right? And I could see a lot of parallels with native people in like we are not going to be exploited.
Yep.
And then the other piece is the Western migration of the monarch butterfly has been really endangered, and they've said actually it's these eucalyptus trees that have kind of saved the monarch butterfly because it just grows wild and it's useless. But it has kind of saved the monarch butterfly from all of the other degradation that has happened, you know, in California. So anyway, I love that story and that wisdom.
And just the realities of how we have looked at our native brothers and sisters over several hundred years and seen them in a useless way. And yet here they are saving us from ourselves these days.
Yeah. It's absolute mic drop truth.
Yeah.
So the next picture I have is yours. Mm. And maybe you can tell us, you know, what you did a week and a half ago and how that came about. I don't know. You can back up as long as you want. I know you've done direct action, even protesting the Dakota pipeline, and just appreciated how you've taken your own body and put it in places. But tell us about this woman who you met and some of her story. Maybe we'll just start with like that sacred story of the place that you were at and move from there.
Sure. Just a tiny bit of context for me personally is, I don't even know how many years ago, but I started using the phrase for myself is that I want to be, I've got the word direct action in my head. I want to be an active participant in my own life. I can stay in my head a lot and think about a lot of things, and recognizing my personal need to be an active participant in my own life equated to bodily becoming present in any type of given situation that might be on my heart or mind, which is what led me to Standing Rock back in 2015. And then a few weeks ago, Rebecca Ulicic actually phoned me and asked if I would want to be a partner with her in heading to, she knows my passion around Line 3 and pipelines. And anyway, she asked me to participate, if I wanted to be a partner with her, so that if something happened to one of us, we could look out for the other, kind of a thing. And so I said, absolutely, like, I would love to do that. And so she knew of a direct action that was taking place on February 2nd. And we got ourselves prepared. She came and picked me up and we headed up to the Fond du Lac Reservation. And the lady you see here, which I need to correct, that's not my photo. I just pulled it from a Facebook video and just still shot it. Partly because we're not allowed to take pictures of people. And so they actually took our phones, not took our phones, asked us to place our phones in a specific spot for a period of time while we were up there. But anyway, her name is Tayshia Martineau. And Tayshia is a Fond du Lac Native American from that reservation. And she has purchased land specifically right on the pipeline, like it abuts the pipeline, to the point where the group of people who had gone up there to do the direct action, we're like parking on along the side of the road near all the construction workers' vehicles as well. So we're that close to it. So they had called for this direct action. So we headed up there and we ended up going to two different locations. This was the second one. So David, I'm looking at the order. Does it matter to you if I veer from the order on the slide?
You can.
Okay. So we had gathered together and we waited about an hour or more while people kept showing up and we were given instructions along the way about how not to be engaged with the police because they have people assigned to be police liaisons. That is for our safety ultimately, so that on the site we would not get separated from the group or separate ourselves from the group and try to stand alone, but instead let the police liaisons who were with us do the work of connecting with the police. So we eventually got the location where we were supposed to go. It was just 5 minutes from where this woman has set up camp, which, by the way, her land that she has purchased, she's not built anything there. It's literally tents and a eco-friendly outhouse. And people who have come from other states can stay there. Like there's one of a big army tent, so they can actually sleep there overnight if need be. And so we all gathered in that spot. Sorry, I'm getting notifications here. And we, from there, were given instructions of where to head. So all of our vehicles headed to a spot about 5 minutes away. And then we parked on the side of the road, but we hiked about a mile in. And when you do these direct actions, there are four levels of participation denoted by colors: red, orange, yellow, and green. Red being you're willing, you're prepared to be arrested. Orange being you are willing to protect those who are putting themselves in a position to be arrested. Yellow, kind of self-explanatory, and green, like I don't want to be arrested. So there weren't really any yellow representatives at that time, but Becca put herself in a position to be on the orange team. I was on the green team so that if anything happened to her, then I could be there for her and bail her out and that kind of thing. So when we arrived at the location, the red and orange people actually bolt and try to get to their specific spot in time to be locked in and locked into wherever they're like connecting themselves to machinery. And the orange people are helping protect them so that they can do that before any police arrive. We ended up hiking, our group ended up hiking about a mile in to where the construction was actively happening. And we locked arms and began to do various songs and chants about stopping line three and about oil and that kind of thing. And the police ended up showing up probably 15 or 20 minutes after we arrived there. But the orange group and red group had gone beyond us. And I found out later they actually split into two different groups and had locked themselves in that location. When the police arrived, the liaisons connect with them and kind of find out what their approach is going to be. And the police tell us as much or as little as they want to tell. And then those liaisons come back and meet with each of us in like groups of three or four as we're, you know, bunched up and doing these loud chants. And they relay to us what the police are saying is going to happen. And all we were told was that we would be given opportunities to step away to give up the fight, if you will, and that we, they would use non-lethal ways to remove us if we chose not to leave. So they didn't name that. So in my mind, I'm thinking historically that's could be, why am I forgetting the word, David? The spray, tear gas.
Tear gas.
Or it could be rubber bullets. I mean, which are, that which can be fatal actually. Now I'm making this up in my head. They didn't say that. They just said that they would use non-lethal action. So I want to represent them well as well. The feeling when we were there to me didn't feel horribly intense. Now that being said, I think for someone maybe who would go to do something like this for the first time, it could feel far more nerve-wracking than it felt for me. So I don't want to paint it like, you know, it's lollipops and sundaes. But it, to me, it wasn't, we were intensely showing up, but it didn't seem like there was intense in terms of clash. And long story short, I mean, we got like a 15-minute warning, then we got a 5-minute warning, then we got a 1-minute warning. And at that point, by then, we had all decided that we're in that location, that we would not separate at all. We would leave together. So we stayed locked arms. In total, I think we were probably on the land an hour and 20 minutes, maybe, because we also walked very slowly leaving that land to continue to keep the work at bay, because as long as we're on that space, they can't run the machinery. So our goal isn't to, that day, our goal wasn't like an end all, we would stop it from happening at all. It was to interrupt the work and to slow it down. There was some intensity from the foreman, but Tayshia here pictured really had words to say to him about where they were at and what was going on and how it was affecting the Fond du Lac people. At that point, then we left and actually went to a secondary location, which is what you see pictured here. And this is like what you see pictured here is the second half of our action there. And our action there, again, we stopped things from going on for about 30 minutes and then stepped out into the street. And this is where Tayshia shared her story. And I actually had stepped away. I didn't hear this personally. I heard it later through watching the video that this clip is from. This was a highly emotional location for Tayshia. And she shared that it was at this location that her grandmother had been taken from the tribe. And in her words, her grandmother, that they took her grandmother's hair. They took her grand, meaning they cut it, because when they grabbed the children back in the day, they would cut their hair. They would tell them they could not use their language and other things. So Tayshia explained she lost her hair, she lost her language, and she lost her virginity. And so they had assaulted her grandmother probably endlessly for a period of years.
Just to clarify, these are boarding schools.
Well, this is what I think. I have to say, I don't know if you remember me saying this, David, that is what I pictured, that this must have been what happened at the boarding school. So I don't know that she named that, but that's what my imagination says, that this was a site probably of a boarding school, which if we've done any reading in our history of how we have tried to make Native peoples assimilate, especially we as Christians, we stole them from their land, stripped them from their land, stripped them from their heritage, forced them to learn English, forced them to speak only in English, forced them to look as white as possible, cutting their hair and restricting them from any type of their native practices. You can tell I'm getting heated up. I just, the pillaging and the, I'm sorry, and I'm not sorry to use this word, but the rape of an identity. Yeah. And not to mention what bodily may have happened. I don't probably need to fill in the words there. So to hear her, is that okay, David? Is that?
Yeah. No,
okay. So to hear her share, she went on to say later as her grandmother, you know, became an adult, had her own kids, then her own kids had kids, Tayshia being her granddaughter, when Tayshia was a young girl, which I would guess Tayshia's maybe late 20s, early 30s. I know she has kids. She said when she was a little girl, her grandmother brought her back to that space, and the Fond du Lac peoples brought their kids back to that space. And that's where they, that actual location is where they imparted the language, taught them how to do their hair. I mean, there's, I have goosebumps everywhere. It's where they tried to bring back and reinstate all that had been stolen from them, or at least parts of what had been stolen to them, and impart them into future generations. And here is line three. Here is Enbridge forcing an oil line through this sacred space. I wish I could impart to all of you the emotion that I feel, the emotion that she expressed. This is the group, this picture is the group reaching down and touching the ground. And Tayshia is saying to everyone that's there, this is your land as well. Like, this pillaging and this raping of the land, because David, they're clear cutting everything. It's horrific how it looks up there. She's trying to reconnect us with the land as well, even though it is Fond du Lac, God help us, reservation land. She's trying to help us white people get connected to Mother Earth, to, I mean, and she's using, you know, the four-leggeds and the creatures of the air, the winged creatures, the trees. She's trying to get us to be reconnected so we'll care. We'll actually carry caring in us and recognize that this, yes, it's happening here, but it's happening. I do it to my own land. And that's not even my land, by the way. Yeah. I want to pause to let you ask questions or direct us, because I could actually probably talk for a day on this.
I love it. Well, I love that we're having this space that you can share. You understand.
Yeah.
I don't love what this story is about.
No.
You know, and this is a good pause too for those listening. If you have any questions or comments or stirrings that you want to post in the chat, do that. We can interact around them too. But I think this is, go ahead.
Well, I want to pause to just say also, in this particular area of the Enbridge pipeline, my understanding is that Tayshia is running solo as a tribal member with doing direct actions in this particular area. Now, there are camps along the pipeline in different parts of Minnesota, but very spread out, and she is representing very alone. So that there's that piece as well.
Yeah. I'm going to share this next. Tara Huska was one of the speakers Wednesday. And, you know, she's set up at a camp, you know, in northern Minnesota along this line. And,
which, by the way, we were in near Sawyer, so south and west of Duluth, and so Tara is even further north.
Yep, further north. And so she was like in this little like lean to, you know, it was negative 30 degrees of what, you know, running water or electricity at its, you know, wood stove. So it's like doing these direct actions, like it's costly, like it's not easy to do. And, you know, I think you shared this statistics, which I've heard as well, that, you know, these pipelines bring in a lot of out-of-state workers, and, you know, oftentimes it's the Native women who end up being harassed, exploited, raped. Yeah. Isn't the statistic like 1 in 3 Native women will be, you know, sexually exploited?
And
you know,
and that is specific. That stat is specific to near pipelines, not just line three, near all pipeline work that's happening.
Yeah. And so Tara is just saying, like, last week her car windows were all broken. You know, water protectors, you know, are often harassed at any local business. And there's just, you know, they're treated with a lot of violence and hostility. And, you know, she made this connection, which I just thought was really wise, of when we treat the land with violence, we treat one another with violence. When our relationship with the land is one of exploitation and extraction, this disregard translates to our view of one another. And I, you know, what struck me again is so often these water protectors are painted as, you know, the radical extremists mm-hmm. who are the problem. And it's just like, these are the most like buoyant, loving, wise people where like, this is the only sane thing to do is what, like when I'm with them, again, it's this gross myth of the middle that the moderate is somehow like the saving grace of this nation. It's not. The moderate middle is, you know, completely in a coma of what is, of how toxic the way we've learned to relate to one another really is. And so I really like Tara's voice is really huge. And you might remember, I didn't realize this was the same Tara, but if you remember the story a year ago in Minnesota, there was a TSA officer who, you know, there was a story about her harassing a Native woman. That was Tara.
Oh, wow. I did.
So Tara was flying from DC to here to help with protecting and protesting line 3. And when she was going through TSA and here, the officer like patting her down, takes her braids standing behind her and goes, "Giddy up, giddy up." Tara is, you know, a legal, you know, she's a lawyer. Like, so it's like, you're absolutely messing with like an incredibly educated, like, I know what I'm doing person, but it's just even those perceptions of you're not really real. You're a mythology of our past. And you don't have any wisdom to offer me other than like, you know, a joke or someone's mascot or, you know, so anyway, it's like that happens here. It's kind of like what I would say is the coma of the middle.
Yep. You know, David, as you and I chatted this week and you talked about, we talked about that whole concept. If we're doing this much violence to the land, how much violence are we doing to people? And I said to you, I just got this massive picture in my head of imagining, I realize they're using machinery now a days, but imagining, you know, I was thinking of the power that goes into like breaking up the land, you know, this kind of a thing. And you've got this heavy pickaxe, you're putting all of your muscle into it, and you're angrily trying to break that damn earth up so it will do what you want it to do and it will concede to you. And that image is exactly what has been applied to our Native sisters and brothers. That image is the exact kind of power and control that is applied to our sisters and brothers. That is the exact kind of power that is applied to the 1 in 3. That power and control, and with that kind of energy that we have used against, if we will do it to the land, how much more will we do it to each other? It's powerful. It's
yeah,
and heartbreaking. And you know me, David, and a lot of people in our congregation know me. It is very hard for me to master my tongue in this conversation and use non-4-letter F words in particular. It just makes me so angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it might be the time to plug the Netflix series, The History of Swear Words.
Touche. Touche. Yes.
They legit can be helpful.
Yeah.
So this is one of the pictures you took, and tell us about this. I'll put up Mary's.
Oh, thank you, Mary.
Mary and Mike. Mike's got a video. Mike's posted his video yesterday on line three, and you know, just the, you know, tar sands oil is the dirtiest. It's the worst kind.
Yeah. So there are different types of oil that we use. I mean, we use natural gas, different types of oil, and tar sands literally is being phased out. And yet this is what, so Enbridge, who is the owning company, privately owned company that is building this pipeline, this line three pipeline, they are pumping, they are wanting to pump tar sands oil, which is the dirtiest oil. And by the way, it comes from another freaking country. It's coming from Canada. And God bless our Canadian brothers and sisters, but Enbridge, I mean, so this pipeline is being built. It's coming through Minnesota. It's going under the Mississippi River on several locations. The intersection between pipelines and our waterways is so significant. This pipe, as you look at it, the green in the pipe is actually the color that the pipe should be. However, this particular piping that Enbridge has been using has been sitting around for 5 years or more, and all the white you might ever see on the pipe is where they've had to do some kind of repair work on the pipe. So in some places like this, you see extensive lengths of white, and then there's other places where you see patches. They're putting in the ground where it's the worst oil, it's the dirtiest oil, and then they're putting it into pipes that are not going to withstand the leaks that we're going to have along this pipeline. Again, I start to lose my words because I get so ratcheted up because of the carelessness, the selfishness, the greed. Everything about this pipeline is wrong, and everything about any of our legislators letting it happen is wrong.
Yeah, and there's a lot to learn about that. I, you know, maybe the shortest way I can even get a handle on it is kind of like, if you're trusting like the impeachment process to work.
Good example.
Like the way these things get approved, and then the like kind of ritual of like, we did all our homework and we went through all the tribal approvals and we did all, like, there's all these like kind of things that check. So I think the sound bites can appear like we can trust that people really have our, you know, have done their homework on making best, you know, best solutions. And I think that's a misplaced trust, but I mean, you know, the trust of the public is exploited quite regularly.
And I mean, we've just been through 4 years, and I realize it's been going on longer than that, but of consistent lying. So the fact is that Enbridge and partners actually are, there are so many things they're actually lying about. And so we, as your average everyday Shaniqua and Simon, like, we are looking at things just assuming that people are telling the truth when they're telling us that these checks and balances have gone through the right processes, and it's simply not so. And Enbridge has been reported even saying it would cost the money that they will get from getting this pipeline through will more than cover all the fines that they'll receive for all the rules and laws and procedures and stuff that they broke. So sure, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, there's more to say and learn, and So if you're interested in hearing more, you know, get in contact with Donette. Mike
or
and Mary.
The Doula Stitches or yep. Stopline3.org. I mean, lots of resources out there.
Yeah, and maybe you can put some of those on our group page here. You know, following Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, you can look them up. They did the Wednesday. So if you want to go back and watch that, you know, it was about an hour long or so. And on the page where that's listed in Facebook, there's a lot of resources. There's also a letter that's being signed to go to the Biden administration, since this is kind of like unfortunately been passed through the governor's office here. It's kind of, there's hope that the Biden administration could stop this, kind of like it shut down Keystone. And then there's a few lawsuits that are waiting, but construction is going, you know, the idea is to try to rush the construction process. So when these suits are that are heard in June, that it's basically done. So there's lots to learn. What I want to say in closing and kind of hearing words like direct action and you know, I've just been feeling a lot more of kind of moving, not just mind, heart, but moving body from the middle to the margin. And you see, like, if you see this through the lens of Jesus doing direct action at the temple, like he broke stuff in order, you know, and it's like, well, what did that do? Well, it shut it down for a day. And my guess, even in that read, is it was very intentional and thought through. So, and what I find even in like the water protectors of like where camps are and when you do direct action and how, and the training to do it of like, I know from someone who like grew up with the gospel of the middle, that is like learning. You know, I think some of it is just starting to have a posture change. Like when we see the commercials, like the best Jeep can do is offer the, you know, a Whitechapel in Kansas as the hope for a broken country. And it's like, that's not where it's at. And it's not where it's going to come from. Like the healing will come when we center the wisdom and follow the saints that have already long been living from the margins. That's our hope for us as we celebrate the season of Epiphany. We've got a lot of thank yous. Just want you to see these. I think that's from Greg. Greg, it's your birthday today, I believe. So
happy birthday, Greg.
And it's James Palm's 16th birthday today. You know, we celebrate St. Valentine's Day. So what a day. Donette, it is an honor, you know, to know you and be able to have this conversation with you this morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. If you have any, like a closing blessing or thought for us, I'll let you have the last word before we have communion.
Well, I think the last word I want to leave us with is with everything that you just said, kind of in wrapping up, David, I want to offer a gracious invitation of what it might look like to be an active participant in our own lives and in this type of work. Not everyone is going to feel comfortable going to a camp. Not everyone is going to feel comfortable showing up in that way. But even as we saw in our city this last summer, we can show up on our Capitol's steps. We can show up in letters that we write to our representatives. We can show up, we can take forward, we can make forward motion and become bodily and actively involved beyond our head and our hearts in a lot, in a variety of ways. And I would just invite us all to consider, what's the next right thing for me to do? What's the next right thing? And may I be a person who graduates myself and keeps moving forward and looking at what else can I do? So I just leave us with that invitation, I think.
Yeah, thank you. That's such a good and gracious word. I ditto that. I feel like pay attention to the energies. So there's like a should energy that doesn't work. But there's kind of a gracious energy that's like, here's the next step. And I think when you notice that, it's really important as you like kind of get acclimated. But for me, it's been years of just starting to follow these voices. So that I think was the first step for me, was just learning to get these voices regularly in my life. Thank you, Donette.
Thank you, Mills, and thank you, David.
Yeah, sure. Wow, I really appreciate your sharing this deeply disturbing account. I always appreciate the way you show up bearing witness with Christ's eyes. And thank you to both you and David for how you have framed this for us. Tony and I are traveling as we listen, and we're not able to share as much as we might have liked, but my heart breaks with yours for these abuses of land and people. I'm guessing that's from Pat. So, yay. Well, I will take you off the screen, Donette, and I'm going to share our communion and